Hey everyone, this is Louis Vargas, and you're listening to Episode 6 of the Art Scene Podcast. This week's guest is Catherine Powers Noland, a fellow alum of the University of San Diego, and much like myself, is also a product of the university's Department of Art, Architecture, and Art History. Catherine now works for University Galleries, USD's primary exhibition venues that offers a variety of exhibition and educational programs while managing a print collection and a collection of Native American art and artifacts. In today's episode, we'll hear Catherine talk about the type of work she does for University Galleries, the San Diego art scene, and finally her own work as an artist. And now, here's our conversation. How's it going, Catherine? How's San Diego? Is the weather treating you well? Because over here in the Bay Area, it's like really, really cold.
I'm good. Thanks, Louis. The weather is 75 as usual. So nothing to complain about.
Oh, I'm jealous. I'm so jealous. I interviewed Noe Olivas before you.
Yeah.
And he talked a little bit about the weather, and I was so jealous. And meanwhile, I looked outside, and it's just, like, covered in fog in my neighborhood.
That sounds about right.
So, I guess before I begin, I want to let my listeners know, we went to school together. We went to USD together. We were both in the art department together. Your husband, Jay, I also took classes with, who was a couple years before me. We also were in the art department together. And you and I worked together on campus for a brief moment at University Design Department on campus at USD.
Yeah.
So we hung out a lot.
Yep.
and then the other random tidbit is that you and my girlfriend were in the same sorority. So that's like the other connection there.
Yes. San Diego is a small world.
I know, very much so. But yeah, so what have you been up to?
Well, I've been working actually back at USD, which I think you know, for their University Galleries department, which was created after both you and I graduated. And I've been working there for about 2.5 years now. So that takes up the majority of my time.
Nice. What do you do on a daily basis with them over there?
Right. So there are only 4 of us in our department. There's the director, the curator of the print collection, a collections manager for the anthropology collection, and me. And we program about 8 to 10 exhibitions a year.
Wow.
So we're really busy, and we basically all have to do many jobs that would perhaps be one person's job in a larger organization. So the majority of what I do is exhibitions management or coordination. And then I also do a little bit of collections management as well for the print collection. So those two things sort of entail on the exhibition side, doing all of the logistics, including shipping, labels, if there's a catalog, sort of managing the production of that catalog.
Yeah.
And then on the sort of collections management side, that would include cataloging new objects or going back and filling out other, like the maybe less filled out catalog object records and organizing the physical objects in the collection.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then, so what led to this job? Because I know, I know a little bit about that you worked at University of Design briefly, but then you didn't for like a couple years or a few years. Mm-hmm. What led to you getting this job on campus?
Right. So I'll just back up because I know you know this, but just so everybody else knows too. So University Design was a department on campus that did a myriad of things. Their main thing just being to sort of control the overall look of the university. And the other thing that they did would sort of interesting was they programmed a couple gallery spaces on campus. Although because they're just 2 people and they're so busy, they just didn't do that really regularly or with any type of sort of strategic vision in mind. So after I had worked there and worked on a couple of exhibitions with them, and after we graduated, they basically decided to create a new department on campus that would program the gallery spaces on campus and sort of bring them all together into one sort of vision. And so they hired a director, Derek Cartwright. And so with that, a new department was created and they needed somebody to be their executive assistant. So no one had had this job before. And so they basically had an open call to apply. And so when asking around, my name was mentioned by a couple different people since I had been both in University Design and in the art department. And so that was a really nice thing for me to sort of get the call to ask to apply for the job. So I did. And up until that point, I had really only been working in museums on an internship basis, not being paid for my work. And I had been doing an administration job for a retail company. So that had sort of given me some real life experience with budgeting and that sort of thing. So I applied in August and then had got the job, I think by November. It's sort of a long process, and then started in January. So yeah, that's sort of what led up to that.
Yeah. Cause I do know that you make art as well. Yeah. You're an artist yourself, and you made some pretty interesting work. At least the stuff that I saw when we were in college together. My favorite was the lawn chair.
So yes.
That I remember seeing.
Yeah.
Which was just like literally a lawn chair, but with like real lot, like sod, like yes, grass, like on the lawn yes, chair.
A yeah, literal lawn chair.
How far back were you interested in art? Like, was this something you've always had as a child that you were interested in creating art, being involved with art making and, you know, museum practice? Or was this something in high school, college level that you started?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, both of my grandmothers were artists. My grandmother on my dad's side had an MFA from Long Beach State. And my mom's mom was a watercolorist and sort of a more formal traditional artist. And she was the one who sort of taught me how to paint and how to draw. And so that was a really nice relationship and connection for me. As I sort of got older, especially in high school, it's sort of how I started to identify myself as an artist, or that's what I was interested in, and especially interested in art history. And by my senior year, I sort of realized that I wanted to go into art history and I wanted that to be my major in college. And so that was really awesome for me to sort of walk into USD and know that that's what I wanted to do with my next 4 years. So I sort of started off with a lower division art history course, and the chair of the department taught that and was my advisor. And so he was really great and sort of recognized that this was something that I wanted to do and put me on a track to really finish that pretty quickly. And one of the requirements to be an art history major was to take a couple lower division art classes. So I signed up for Foundations in Form with Allison Weiss, and that really changed my outlook on art because I had never done anything that wasn't, you know, just 2D before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she taught us how to use the wood shop and the metal shop, and it was sort of really eye-opening for me because I never thought that using power tools and doing yeah, woodworking was something that I could even do and was possible. And I got really hooked and decided that I also wanted to be a visual arts major as well. So that's how I had that, ended up doing the dual majors and majoring in art technologies and critical studies, which was the emphasis that was there for people who were more interested in conceptual art mm-hmm, and not necessarily a medium within art practice.
Mm-hmm. And are you still more interested in pursuing a career as an artist, or is that sort of is going to run parallel with you wanting a career in museum?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think my senior year of college, I sort of felt like, yeah, maybe I could go on and get an MFA and this could be something that I could do with my life. And then right around the time I graduated, I started having second thoughts about that. And the thing that I sort of realized is that, you know, becoming an artist is really, really hard. it just takes a lot of will and it takes a lot of drive and it takes just an overwhelming need to be creating all the time. And I'm just not somebody who necessarily needs that. I feel like I can get my sort of artistic or creative, I don't know, like drive or need out just by cooking dinner every night.
Yeah.
And I saw that it wasn't the same way for other people.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I sort of felt like, well, I can have a creative job, but it doesn't necessarily have to be an artist. Mm. And I think it was important to know that before going in and spending money and spending time on a program. Especially when I think jobs for artists like, professors, and tenure track positions are really sort of dwindling.
Yeah.
So yeah, I decided to sort of focus. I sort of have had a couple different routes from there. I thought maybe about doing furniture design for a while, and took a lot of carpentry and woodworking classes. And but after really sort of working in a couple of jobs for a while, I realized that my type of personality really works well for administration.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoy what I do. And so I think I've kind of finally found what I want to do. So
was that, so that university design job that we did, which I should explain, it was one of the most interesting jobs I ever had. And it was the first job I ever had, I think, coming out of literally right at like 2 days after I graduated from college, I started that job again.
Yes.
Like, was that kind of your first like taste of something other than like making art, like that you, like a job that you were doing that you saw yourself using whatever knowledge and skills you had being applied to something else?
Yes. Yeah. And I specifically remember, working on the Jasper Johns exhibition that we had. Which was probably one of the biggest exhibitions I think that they did while we were there.
Yeah, yeah.
And getting to work on that exhibition and going in during install, and they had a couple of his copper plates out, and it was before they were installed, and I got to go up and I got to spend time with these copper plates before they were put behind plexiglass. And it was just this really amazing experience. And just to have that contact with these objects from art history, and to have the background of having made prints and both having taken classes where I learned about his work and sort of applying that knowledge to what was in front of me was really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of, that was, you know, funny enough, I did the condition reports for that exhibit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it was my senior year. I took, it was like the first ever museum studies class or something, the curatorial practice class that they taught at USD, which by the way has gone a long way since then. But, but I remember that part of the class was we were helping doing the condition reports for Jasper Johns when they were setting it up.
That's great.
Yeah. But I do remember seeing you around like actually physically being able to touch the art. We weren't, but
yeah, well, that's the great thing about being a registrar and condition reporting too, is that's your job to be super close to the art and get to touch and interact with it.
Yeah. And I still think that that's the most like important part of like, if for anybody who's interested in wanting to pursue a career and like in museum work is being able to have those types of, even if it's free, like, you know, you don't do it for any cash or anything, but it's being able to have interaction with the artwork, being able to do the work behind the scenes and then seeing what goes in there. And you kind of, I know for me, at least, I don't know about for you, became addicted at that point that I just wanted to just keep doing that type of work over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
this whole time while you're doing all these different jobs, right? Like you're, I can't remember. I do remember you worked at a retail store, and then, you know, now you're working at USD, but in that moment, were you still making artwork?
Yes. So, I've continued making work, although I sort of, at this point in time, I come to it as more as just this, I don't want to say hobby because that's so, like, that's a gross word. I don't know. But with a lot less pressure, I don't feel like, oh, I have to produce. I have to get myself into shows. I just do it when I have an idea that I'm interested in and I want to see it completed. So I've continued making artwork since graduating, but probably just on a much smaller scale and a lot less than maybe I would if I had gone into a program.
Right. So I told you I was going to ask you about this. So I looked you up, and on your online, you're associated with this thing called DNZA.
Yes.
Explain what this is to me.
So DNZA, or we also call it Danza after Tony Danza, is our artist collective. And this was actually started by my husband with one of his best friends. And so it's myself, it's my husband, Jay Noland, Josh Pavlik, our friend, and Matt Bradley. And so together we sort of form this collective, and it's basically just all of us making our own work in conversation with one another, and sort of sharing this website. But when I graduated from school, there wasn't really any alternative art spaces in San Diego, with the exception of Sezio, which was sort of, you know, doing their own thing in a little house in Golden Hill. So we decided to put on our own shows. And so we called that Danza Projects, and we just did it out of our apartments. So we had Lauren Lockhart, who at the time was the curator at the New Children's Museum, curate our shows for us. So they at least had some sort of cohesion there, or a thesis.
Right. So professionalism.
Yes, professionalism. And so she's really great. And she came up with a theme for all of our exhibitions. And the first one was I'd Prefer Not To, after the story of Bartleby the Scrivener. And so we basically cleared out our apartment and stuffed all the furniture into the back couple of rooms. And we just had a little show. And so that was the first of Danza Projects, and it was really successful, and people were excited about it. People came, and, you know, we felt like we got to make new work. And so we decided to have a second one, and this time Josh Pavlik decided to host it at his apartment. So we did the same thing, and Lauren carried it again, and that time the theme was suspension of disbelief. And it was great, and he had this little apartment down in downtown San Diego on East Street, like right across the street from the public library there before the new Central Library. And it was awesome because, you know, he's on the ground floor and he had these giant windows, and it really felt like a real gallery space because his apartment was much more sort of industrial, like this little loft. And after that, he sort of came to us and said, you know, I'd kind of like to keep having shows in my apartment. We're like, okay. And he decided to call it Helmuth, and that's how Helmuth was born, which the name was, if I remember correctly, Tony Danza's co-star, Catherine Hellman.
What? Really? That's where the name came from?
Yeah. So that's how those two are connected. But we liked the name because we thought it sounded kind of German.
Yeah.
So we kept it. Yeah.
And do you guys still do DNZA, or is this now kind of defunct since the Helmuth project it seems like it took over what DNZA started, right?
Yes. So Helmuth kind of took over and then became really its own thing. And that's really all due to Josh Pavlik. I mean, he really grew that into its own sort of machine, in which he just programmed some super amazing, amazing shows and did that for about 5 years and even moved into a bigger, larger space. And Helmuth became, I think, one of the sort of more important alternative spaces. Mm-hmm. And he did that without selling any artwork, without having any need for financial income. It was just sort of artists show up and you do it yourself. He just lived out of the gallery. And so that was just his rent. And that's basically how it worked. He kind of had his last show. But he's keeping the space. He's just sort of taking in a hiatus, cause he's understandably pretty, I think, wiped out from this pretty grueling schedule that he's had. And so because of that, Danza has now reemerged. So,
oh, really?
Yes. And, but just for a little while, we're going to use, Helmuth's space to sort of create our own artwork and focus on Danza again for a while. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I left you at San Diego, and I mean, you, like you mentioned it earlier, there wasn't really a lot of spaces for artists to do stuff there. Yeah. It's definitely changed a lot.
Yeah.
The first sign of it, the first hint I got of it was about my second year of grad school. I had this professor, and he, I don't know what he did for a living, but he basically would fly every Monday from LA, from his house in LA to San Francisco, mm-hmm. and then fly and then teach classes Monday through Thursday and then fly back Thursday night to LA.
Wow.
And he did this every single week. I don't know what he did for a living that he was able to do this on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And because I'm pretty sure teaching didn't pay a lot, but yeah. like, but he, hung out on the weekends in LA and he was really in tune with the art scene there. And he mentioned to me, he asked me one day, like, oh, he saw me wearing my Padre hat, which I wore a lot of and up here in the Bay Area as I'm wearing one right now. But he asked me what part of San Diego was from, where did I go to school? And then he mentioned to me, he just made this comment about, oh, why did you come up here to San Francisco for grad school? And I said, well, because that was the only other place I could go to for the program I wanted. And, you know, there was a good art scene up here and a lot of museums. And then he made this comment about like, oh, well, San Diego's on the rise. You know that, right? I'm like, what? And then, you know, like, it's like, just left like a year ago. There was nothing coming on the rise a year ago.
Yeah.
And then he was like explaining to me about how there was a lot happening.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Helmuth projects. And
yeah.
And at that point I was like, I don't know what that is. I'm sorry. And then I remember looking it up and I was like, oh, this is like a thing. Like there's
yeah.
like a place where art, and I think since then there's like a lot. I mean, I've been following on Twitter and like on Facebook and I've noticed a lot more things was happening. And I was just talking to, you know, I mentioned, I was talking to Noe last time and he mentioned even how Barrio Logan has changed ever
yeah.
since like Voz Alta and all these other like, Chicano art, Mexican American art galleries like are opening up there. And that Barrio Logan, which is shocking to me, is starting to be gentrified.
Yeah, you know? It's yeah. a problem, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I hear. But, I mean, even that's shocking to me, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what can you say about the San Diego art scene? Like, how much have you seen it change in the last, like, 3 or 4 years?
There are noticeably more spaces to show. Which is pretty amazing. You know, I remember right about the time that I graduated, Luis de Jesus, which was a gallery in Little Italy that was showing emerging contemporary artists, left. And that was like a big blow because that really felt like a place in which, you know, interesting artists from San Diego were getting shown.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of a realization that, you know, for-profit galleries have a hard time surviving in San Diego mm-hmm. just because there's not enough of an audience there, you yeah. know.
And why do you think that is?
I really can't say. I mean, I think that there are quite a few wealthy patrons in San Diego. They probably live more in La Jolla.
Right.
But, you know, understandably, like, contemporary and conceptual art's not everyone's thing. It's
yeah.
not necessarily something you want in your home to live with.
Yeah.
And so you sort of need a bigger pool of people to...
The beach is too attractive over there. We don't need... There's
yeah.
a lot of need for an art scene.
Totally. But... after Helmuth sort of started, a couple other places like Bread and Salt and La Bodega Gallery down in Barrio Logan started. Ship in the Woods started, which has been this great place, and that sort of is more up in North County. But they've also been driving a pretty great program as well. And I think a lot of it has been due to UCSD's MFA program
mm-hmm.
and their PhD program as well. They have a PhD in art practice.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of really wonderful people in that program who are, you know, both need a place to show, but are also interested in sort of doing it themselves. So that's pretty great.
And, so let's go back to your job at USD right now, right? And so, you know, there's this growing art scene in San Diego. Does USD, now that there's an art gallery there and you guys put on, you have a schedule of events and shows that you put on, do you guys have a place in that growing art scene in San Diego, or is it pretty secluded up on that pretty hill?
That's a good question. We ourselves are sort of facing that problem of, okay, we now have this sort of successful program that's gotten attention from, you know, organizations like the Wall Street Journal. But are we, like, when do we start trying to reach the community outside of campus? Mm-hmm. Because up until this point, we've been really focused on our students mm-hmm. and our campus community. And because of that, I don't think that we have much of a dialogue with the San Diego art scene. Mm-hmm. Also, our focus is really, really narrow, because our biggest focus and what the majority of our attention goes to is print culture right. and history of printmaking. And lots of times that's a very traditional art form. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the biggest show that we did was on Rembrandt. And that's not necessarily, I think, what a lot of contemporary conceptual artists feel connected to. But we're trying to sort of expand that vision, and we recently received a grant from the Getty to do a PSTLA show. So oh, that's wow. really exciting. Yeah. So we are putting together a show on Brazilian Xerox art from the 1970s up to 1990, and that's going to be a really interesting, provocative show that sort of redefines what printmaking can possibly be. And also has a lot of original research.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that that's a show that can sort of bring in that community and sort of let them know that we're here and that we do these things. But we don't really have a space as of right now to really show, I think, contemporary artists from the community. And I think that's that's one of the reasons why there's not quite as much involvement.
And, he said Derek Cartwright, right?
Is yes.
He originally was at SDMA. He was
yes.
the director, right, at SDMA?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you figured with somebody who's that connected to the, that there'd be a little bit more of a, not a shift, I guess, but a little bit more variety of artwork other than the fine print. Because, right. well, and I guess I should mention, too, the fine print collection, because there's a reason why it's the fine print collection. It's somebody's fine print collection that he gave to the university. And his name is Bob Hohen, who's a
yes.
big-time car dealer in San Diego.
Yes.
And which, funny story, so he lives in North County. I grew up in North County.
Yeah.
And so my sister was a golfer in high school, and she golfed with him. And there's like the three big car dealer families. There's
yes.
Bob Baker, mm-hmm. the Westlows, and the Hohens. And my sister
yeah.
used to tell me all these stories because their kids all went to high school with us.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to tell my sister, you should ask him about the prints, you know, and she's like, no, I'm not going to ask him that. But but when I found out that it was a car dealer who had this fine print collection mm-hmm. and he gave it to USD, you know, I don't know. You probably know more than me at this point, but like, I'm wondering why he gave it to USD. And then two, why it's only been this specific artwork that has been gotten all the attention and the money to show at USD and not really anything outside of that art form.
So Bob Hohen is this really great art collector specifically for prints. And he is super knowledgeable. I mean, there are some collectors that maybe just collect things as an investment, and he collects things with an incredible amount of knowledge and connoisseurship. And he's really brilliant when it comes to that. And so he was originally the president of the Board of Trustees of USD. And during that time, he sort of felt like, well, you know, USD could really use an art program and an art gallery. And they had a little one going. And so he ended up donating the Goya's entire Disasters of War, which was a pretty important series and isn't actually completely all together in a lot of places. So that was really important for USD, and that's sort of how the print collection started. And he also endowed a space in Founders Hall, which enabled these two rooms to be renovated into more professional gallery spaces. So those are the Hohen Family Galleries, and that's where we show all of our exhibitions that are related to print culture. And they are endowed specifically for that. And one thing I will say about print culture is that it's been really overlooked in our history. It's sort of always been seen as this sort of lesser medium because it's less expensive, and it's still true today because it's a multiple. But that's not, that doesn't mean that it's less valuable in its place in art history. And so, and also because it is less expensive, it's possible for us to grow this collection, whereas we couldn't with something like paintings.
Right.
So that's a really great opportunity for USD. So because of that, that was sort of the original idea to create this print collection where we could then have this resource for students to come who are art historians or visual artists, and they can come and they can look at these works and these objects in, you know, in real life, and do original research. And because his interest is in this area, that's what he has endowed. And his interest is really in Rembrandt and with some of the older masters, but that doesn't mean that he's not also interested in some more contemporary artists like Wayne Thiebaud. He also helped us with that show as well. So that has driven some of the programming up until this point. But he's really interested in us sort of growing our own legs. And so he really, you know, he's really supportive of us doing these shows like the show with the Getty. And so that's nice. But, you know, it's going to take some time for us to really expand our programming to beyond old master prints. But I think we're doing it.
Yeah.
We're doing that with the collection, too. So
what do you think your future is at USD right now? Like, are you hoping that it will grow and you continue to be a part of that growth in years to come? Or is there other aspirations you have post-USD? I mean, because I used to work, I worked at USD for 3 years after I graduated too. And let me tell you, it's wonderful to work on campus. Very wonderful. It's a beautiful campus. And you get a lot of different benefits from it, from working there. Free food being one of them.
But there's always something free food.
So it can be a little comfortable. And I remember when I moved up here, I think that was the hardest part for me, was leaving USD, because it had been my home at that point for like 7-8 years.
Yeah. I mean, I will definitely say that starting working there, after having been a student, even, you know, after coming back after 3 or 4 years, I mean, it just felt like, you know, walking around my hometown or something, and I knew everybody already. You know, I knew all the male guys, and I knew everybody in the art department, and I knew all the shortcuts everywhere. And yeah, it feels really comfortable, and that's something USD is really good at. So that does make it kind of hard to leave. We are pretty aspirational and trying to expand our department. And I'm hoping that there's a place for me in that. And I do feel that there is a place for me in that. But we're not totally sure if that's something that we're going to be able to do. I mean, money is always an issue, no matter if it's a nonprofit or, you know, a large museum. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are. That's always going to be your limitation. So we just need to either find some extra funding or get the extra support from the university in order to grow. In the next 5 years, I do sort of see myself moving on at some point, and I'd like to move on to do exhibition coordination for maybe another small museum or gallery, campus gallery.
Although I wouldn't blame you if you stay there forever, because the other end of what I was going to say too is that I would love to go back to USD.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's cool. Like, I'm happy that you are the person that is working with Derek in that gallery, because I love telling people this, but basically you and me were the first people to really touch that fine print collection, if you remember, because that summer that we worked together was the year that fine print room and the galleries were had finished being built, and our job was to slowly move the artwork into the cabinets in preparation for the collection manager and the curator that was coming in.
Yes.
And so I'm glad it was you. Like it's somebody who remembers from the very beginning, you know?
Yeah.
And
I do think that helped me get the job in the end.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think that's huge too. Like I think having alumni come back to work on campus and work in that space, and also being, you know, having you as an alum being a part of the growth is really big. And I mean, I wish all the stuff that was there existed when I was going to school, but all I can be is happy for all the current students to have what I didn't have.
We have an internship program, which I think is really amazing, which is, you know, Derek, our director, is also a professor of practice in the art department, and students are really his main focus and are therefore the driver for our programming. And that's really what we do everything for. And our internship program isn't like, okay, you come in as a student and you make copies for us and we sort of throw some things your way.
Yeah.
It's you come in and we tell you all these projects that we're working on, and we make a list for you and we ask, okay, what are you interested in? And from that feedback, we have students curate shows with us. We have students write our labels. We have students help us, you know, with the cataloging and organization of collections. And we really try to give them some real world experience so they can go on and maybe be more competitive to get a bigger internship in a big museum, or, you know, just have some sort of idea of what it is to work in a museum. So that's a really great part of my job, and I'm totally jealous of them. I totally wish that I had that opportunity as a student.
So art making wise, have you made anything recently, or are you working on anything recently?
I'm currently working on a project, which I have to get started on. I have all the materials ready. So that's exciting to just sort of have these new ideas in my head. As you know, when I was a student, what I did was a lot of really sort of large scale sculptures. Mm-hmm. And I think you know that very well, because I think I made you move a lot of them.
I don't know if you remember, but I even hurt my back.
You did. I feel really bad about that.
So I still tell Steph the story, because I have a fickle back. I mean, I play a lot of sports as a kid, and I at one point threw out my back. And so it's one of those things where if I stop exercising, I will hurt, my back will give out on me. Oh. So that, but yeah, it's, you know, it comes with playing sports like so many years and taking hits. But, for the first time in our 5-year relationship, it happened where my back went out that bad. And it was a year or two ago on my birthday, and Steph had never seen it before. And I was on the floor. It was really crazy. But when that happened, I told Steph the last time this happened was when I was helping Catherine move her art piece. And it was the lawn chair.
It was the lawn chair. Yeah. So that's how big my artworks used to be.
Yeah, it's huge. And I'm not a small guy either. It was a pretty big piece.
So after graduating, I moved into a little studio apartment and had to disassemble all of those pieces. So the lawn chair is no more. And working in this, I was living in this little 300 square foot studio, and, you know, making large scale sculptures just wasn't really practical anymore. And so I started doing these little things and these little projects that I could just do in my home. And since then, that's what I've been doing. So, right now I'm sort of working on, maybe making some paper casts of car parts. like spark plugs. And yeah, we'll see where that goes.
And why is that? I mean, I do remember why, but myself, but tell the listeners why spark plugs?
Well, growing up, so my dad owns a little, auto repair shop, and that was my first job, was working, in the auto repair shop. So kind of a funny thing to like walk in as a customer and there's like a 15-year-old girl like sitting in like this super macho masculine dirty office. How can I help you? And so one of my jobs was doing inventory of the car parts, which is a really sort of dirty job. But I really fell in love with spark plugs in general. I don't know why. They're these beautiful, beautiful objects. Recently my relationship with my dad has changed a lot, to where we're just growing a lot closer. And, I think that just sort of comes with getting older.
Yeah.
And I just sort of wanted to, you know, reflect on that change and also, you know, just reflect on my thoughts about him, my ideas about him. And a lot of that includes sort of my time working for him. Mm-hmm. So I want to make these casts of these objects and spark plugs in particular, just cause I'm interested in their form. So, yeah.
And as your work, becoming more and more personal, you think these days then, or?
Yeah. I think when you're in school, particularly undergrad, I should say, not necessarily master's program. You know, you're given these assignments that are pretty specific, and they're a little bit more about the world around you. So that work then is response to those prompts. And, you know, at a school, you don't have that anymore. So, I mean, really the conversation is with yourself. So, and because I do these things, they're not necessarily meant to be shown, or they're not necessarily for a project in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're definitely grown a lot more personal.
You're married, you have a job.
Yes.
And these are many of the things, many of the reasons why I think a lot of artists post school at any level, undergrad or graduate level, find it hard to continue making art. Mm-hmm. But you and Jay seem to be trying to make it work, right?
Yes.
You know, you guys are trying to still make time for it, and mm-hmm. It's still an important aspect of your lives. Can you speak to that, to like how hard it's been to do that, if sure. it was? And then I think, you know, to, you know, just how long you hope to do it and keep it going for, you know? Because I feel like that's the one thing. I feel like a lot of artists, you know, up and coming artists, mm-hmm. You know, and me, probably even some museum professionals who once made art,
yeah.
like would love to hear, because I you know, and could probably relate to.
Well, I think Jay and I have a special case in that we're two artists and art historians who married each other. And that's important because we both share this passion. We share this love. So it's, you know, it's not like we're doing a favor for one another to talk about each other's artwork, or it's not like one of us is dragging the other to a museum. And that makes things really easy. And I know it's not the same for everyone. And so because of that, we try to keep on each other and cheer each other on when it comes to each other's art practice. And Jay especially has been great for me for that. And I try to return the favor. And I don't want to speak for Jay and his experience either. But I know, especially when I started working full time, it became really hard because it's like, oh, you get home at 5 and you're tired and you got to make dinner. And when do you make art? When do you have the time? And I think that is really the biggest problem. And I think it's only going to get harder if we choose to, like, eventually have kids one day. Mm-hmm. So right now it's really like, okay, you just have to make time for it, whether it's on the weekend or whether, you know, it's during the night, after work. Like I try to, you know, when I'm cooking dinner, I turn to Jay. I'm like, okay, it's time for your turn to go into the studio and make work. And,
yeah.
And I think that that's what works for the both of us is that, yeah. But it's not easy. And to answer the second part of your question, I hope that we always make work. you know, it's not something that you retire from.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was great catching up with you, and it was great having you talk about the San Diego art scene a bit too, and a little bit of what you're in Jay's role. You know, I touched on Jay's part, but you know, definitely your role in it. And the last thing I wanted to ask you was, all right, so you're making art, you're working at USD. Is there anything in the coming up future, like any exhibits, any shows on both those sides that, you know, that you want to talk about or plug a little bit?
Well, I already talked about our Getty show, and that's going to come up in September 2017. So it's going to be a really big deal, and we're very excited about it. But right now we have these two shows up that we're excited about as well. One's American art from the late 19th century, and it's beautiful. It's these works on paper, so it's not just prints. It's some watercolors and some drawings as well by people like Mary Cassatt and John Singer Sargent. So if you're around the San Diego area, that is a fantastic show, and we're doing that in collaboration with the Timken Museum of Art, so that's really exciting. On our own home front, I don't think we have anything scheduled, but I will keep you updated.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on, and
absolutely.
Yeah, and I'll love to have you on again. Next time there's like another USD exhibit, I'll have you on again.
Sounds great.
Or any of your exhibits. All right, everyone. That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed listening to Catherine and learned a little bit more about what's going on in San Diego in terms of art. If you happen to be in San Diego in the next few weeks, be sure to visit the USD campus and see what's going on in the university galleries. For more information on past, present, and future exhibits, visit sandiego.edu/galleries and follow the university galleries on Twitter at USD Galleries. Also, be sure to follow the Art Scene Podcast on Twitter and Instagram at ArtScenePC. Oh, and before I forget, I want to thank Richie Cunning, a local Bay Area rapper, for letting me use his music for my podcast. If you want to learn more about him and his music, be sure to check out richiecunning.com. Okay, till next time.